and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio, your home for news talk and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Another week, another mass shooting. Today, it's in Farmington, New Mexico, where at least three people were killed and two officers were injured outside of a church.
4204, it looks like we might have one patient. We have one subject laying down in the middle of the road.
The shooter was seemingly shooting at random in a residential area. He was killed by police. President Biden will meet with congressional leaders tomorrow for more debt ceiling talks, but House Speaker Kevin McCarthy isn't very optimistic about making a deal.
I still think it's far apart.
CBS's Nicole Killian.
Time is really ticking here. You have President Biden who's getting ready to go overseas to Japan and Australia. You have Congress getting ready to recess as soon as this week. So it really doesn't leave much time. And really, we would need to see a lot of substantive progress by tomorrow.
The default deadline is June 1st. Police still don't know why a man wanted to attack Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly at his office in Fairfax. He wasn't there today, so he attacked staffers instead. Police Sergeant Lisa Gardner.
It is very concerning, and it's quite frankly scary that someone can just walk up to an office holding a baseball bat and just start swinging at innocent victims.
The suspects in police custody. Kids in Oakland will be back in class tomorrow after a week-long teacher strike. KPIX TV's Jocelyn Moran is there.
The teachers union says they reached an agreement to raise compensation by 15%. They say they agreed to add teacher librarians, more counselors, mental health services to schools.
The districts also agreed to help house homeless students. Mother Nature is cranking up the heat out west, where cities like Seattle and Portland set records this weekend. This guy enjoyed the warmer weather on a run today in Seattle.
Every time I pass the fountain, dip my hand to cool down, but I'm enjoying the heat.
Temps could hit triple digits in California soon.
It's me. Hi. I'm the problem. It's me.
Did you know Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal's a Swiftie? CBS's Matt Piper says he's working to make a big change now after Taylor's big Ticketmaster disaster.
Taylor Swift deserves to be treated right.
The Democrat has introduced the Unlock Ticketing Markets Act, which he says would help restore competition to live event ticketing by empowering the Federal Trade Commission to prevent the use of multi-year exclusive contracts.
It means exorbitant ticket prices that are only skyrocketing, and it means less competition.
He says Ticketmaster has locked up 70 to 80% of the market share.
I felt for the fans who were shut out and shut down.
Ticketmaster since had problems with other big events, including Beyonce's tour. Many fans opting to see her in Europe because it's cheaper. This is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Progressive Insurance protects people's cars, homes, and other vehicles. But if you've ever seen our commercials or even just heard our name, you probably already knew that. What you may not know is that we support Humble Design, a nonprofit that furnishes homes for families and veterans emerging from homelessness. Because a little help goes a long way. And a lot of help, well, you get the idea. Now, if you already knew all of this about Progressive Insurance, we're impressed. We'll have to find something else cool to tell you next time. Find out more about how we're dedicated to our customers and communities at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
This is Mike Moen from Wisconsin News Connection. You may have heard my stories on civic media. Wisconsin News Connection is surveying listeners to learn how to better report on issues important to you. Go to WISNewsSurvey.com, fill it out, and you'll be entered to win a $50 Target gift card. Once again, WISNewsSurvey.com to help improve the news and enter to win a $50 Target gift card. Thanks, and we look forward to your response at WISNewsSurvey.com.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. but MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows around 48 tonight under clear skies, west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Slight chance for scattered rain showers. Tomorrow, highs level off around 77, cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Lows around 41. Tomorrow night, clear skies. Sunny skies and calm Wednesday with highs in the mid-60s, chance for scattered storms Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 75.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Good evening, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere show. We are here every Monday night at 7 WAUK 540 AM 101 FM. You know, there's been a lot of talk about what's going on at the border, southern border, not so much the northern border, southern border of the United States. Immigration is always a hot issue. And I thought we should talk a little bit about it. This is the Paul Revere Show. We're always talking about how to keep Wisconsin moving forward. Last week, I had the representative talking about diversity in the state and what's going on. And I thought we should find out how immigration policy is impacting Wisconsin. I thought the best thing to do was to invite an immigration lawyer, Kane Ulahan, from the Ulahan Immigration Law, a fellow Marquette alum. Good evening, Kane. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
So you've been doing immigration law involved for over 15 years. You're a husband, father. You've been around the state paying attention. There's been a lot of discussion about hot issues, Title 42. What is Title 42 and what's going on in the southern border?
Yeah, I mean, we all need to know more about this. We're seeing news reports, but it doesn't tell the whole story. Title 42 is basically, it's an old law we've had on the books a long time about public health. And since we've all been through this public health emergency of COVID recently, well, the government used it as a way to turn people away from the southern border who were seeking to come in, oftentimes to seek asylum. So it was a justification for turning people back and refusing them entry into the U.S. based on the fact that we didn't want COVID-19 to spread. So it was, you know, partly a public health reason, but partly a lot of people see it as sort of a scapegoat or justification to be able to turn away people because we were having a lot more folks coming to the southern border than we've had in recent years.
So when you mention asylum, I mean, are you saying that asylum was a recognized vehicle for legal immigration before this Title 42?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been, you know, it's been legal to seek asylum in the U.S. for decades. I mean, look, after World War II, you know, we had lots of refugees coming here. And refugees and asylees are the same people, just a different name. We've been doing this for a long time. It's been legal. It's always been legal. The things that change are, you know, our processes that we use to sort of serve people with the paperwork they need to come in and get the status or apply for the status. But it's always been legal to apply for asylum if you've been persecuted or have a fear you're going to be persecuted if we send you back to your country.
So the what is going on the southern border right now? People are seeing visuals, you know, people coming up through Mexico. So what is it? What's actually taking place on the ground? And what's sort of the story behind the headlines?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of reasons that there are so many folks kind of amassed at the Mexican-U.S. border, and they're coming from all over the place. They're not just coming from Central America anymore. That's been sort of the biggest area in recent years that people have come from, but there are people coming from South America and other countries, too. And, I mean, the real motivator of it all is that we're facing unprecedented violence and danger in a lot of these countries. And people are fleeing some really unsafe situations. So they're coming to seek safety in the United States, which has been historically a real beacon of hope for people seeking safety from, you know, dictators, from political repression, all different types of societal problems that are going on around the world. And people are seeking safety. And the reason there are so many is that we can only process so many because we have a legal system. So we have a process people go through. Typically, someone would have an interview first with an officer at the border, call it a credible fear interview, just to see, do we believe your case? Is it at least believable? And, you know, does this seem legit? Are we going to go forward with the rest of the process seeking asylum? Or is this someone who doesn't have a real case and we're going to turn them away?
So how does this situation on our southern border sort of impact, or how do you see it here on a day-to-day basis? Your office is in Milwaukee, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm in Milwaukee. I've been here my whole career. And, you know, I serve immigrants all across the state, even some outside the state, but mostly in Wisconsin. And the way I'm seeing it is a lot of people find their way up here once they're released into the country to go to court and present their asylum case. They usually go and try to find a place where they've got family or some close friends that they can stay with, get established, get on their feet. And of course, we have an immigrant population here in Wisconsin, all over the state. And so I'm seeing asylum seekers come up and stay with family to get established and find jobs. Most of them tend to be in rural areas and small towns and communities across the state, although some do, of course, come to the cities like Madison and Milwaukee and Green Bay. But many, many, many of my clients, I'd say the majority, are living in rural areas, and largely they're working on the farms that, you know, we're very proud of here in Wisconsin, a lot of dairy farms. Without that immigrant labor, those farms wouldn't run. They just wouldn't have enough workers. And that's the reality here in Wisconsin. So I'm helping those folks try to win their asylum cases.
So let's sort of getting into the weeds a little bit. You know, like, who can qualify for asylum and how does the asylum process work? So, you know, if listeners are watching, seeing, you know, watching people come up to the border, what is, you know, what's actually going on, and sort of walk us through that whole process.
Yeah, sure. Right. Because asylum isn't for everyone, right? It's a specific, you know, status that someone's asking for. So it's really to protect people who have been persecuted, which is just another way of saying harmed. They've been harmed, or they have a real fear they're going to be harmed if they're sent back. But that harm has to be because they're part of a protected group. You know, that harm has to be because of their race, their religion, their nationality, their political opinion, or because they're part of a certain social group. So we have these categories that someone has to fall into. It's not just that they're in danger or they're going to be harmed just because everyone's in danger in that country. So it's very specific, and you have to say, well, I'm going to be harmed because I'm a racial minority, or I'm a religious minority, maybe, or my politics don't line up with the government in power at this time, and I'm being persecuted. So that's sort of the type of person who's applying. Now, when they apply, if they've been processed by immigration, they're going to go into immigration court and present their case to a judge, and the judge is going to decide. If they get in here, either with a visa or some other way, and they're not detected at the border, they can apply and they'll have an officer look at their case first. And if they don't win with the officer, it'll go to the judge.
If someone is looking for information, where do they go to find out about their rights or whether they qualify for asylum or not?
I mean, that's a great question, and it's really tough. I mean, folks are coming here, they're desperate, they've just fled some kind of dangerous situation. They don't speak the language oftentimes, so it's hard. Now, at the border, the officers do provide them with some information. They provide them with some, and they have this in most languages, so some basic rights. They do provide them a list of free legal services, although I can tell you those legal services are usually very hard to come by because there's such high demand. But they're really going to find an attorney like me who knows about this stuff and can advise them, or some type of nonprofit organization that's helping immigrants and asylum seekers, which there are a number of really great ones out there, but they tend to be, you know, at capacity. They're really working hard and they can't serve everyone. So some people don't ever find out. So it's very challenging for new arrivals who are seeking asylum.
So, you know, I hear people talking about we have open borders and people can just walk across. What is that myth or fact, or, you know, how should we as citizens here in Wisconsin, you know, view that issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do this every day for, you know, over a decade, and I can tell you there's no such thing as an open border. We don't have an open border. There are certainly, you know, all kinds of issues we could debate about whether the border is secure enough, but we have a lot of enforcement. Customs, the Border Patrol is the largest law enforcement agency in the United States. So we have a lot of enforcement happening. And in fact, under Title 42, over 2.5 million people were turned away from the border. So there is a process. It's not perfect, you know, but there is absolutely a process. Most people seeking asylum actually aren't trying to cross illegally. They're turning themselves in at the border and asking our officers, please help me. I'm really scared to go back to my country, which is absolutely legal for them to do. You know, like I said, seeking asylum has been legal here for many decades, and that's all folks are doing. They're just asking for safety.
You know, there was this talk that there was going to be a complete collapse at the border. What's the reality, and, you know, what are we seeing beyond the hype and the pictures?
Yeah, I mean, that didn't happen. At least it hasn't yet, and it doesn't seem like it's going to. The officials down on the border are processing high numbers of people, more than we typically do. I think for a while we were averaging about 10,000 people a day. But there are a lot of people amassed at the border still waiting to get through, and it seems like they are, waiting in order to have their chance to ask our government for its protection. To go through the legal process, whether they get a credible fear interview or just are released in and then talk to a judge and ask for asylum. So that's kind of what's going on right now. We have to keep watching it. Every day can change, right?
So this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8, WAUK 540 AM 101 FM. I am here with Attorney Kane Ulahan of Ulahan Immigration Law, and we're talking.
Let's be real. Mopping is a hassle. You have to fill the bucket, pushing a wet, heavy mop around, then cleaning the mop when you're done so it doesn't grow bacteria. A hassle on top of a hassle. Try Swiffer WetJet. With Swiffer WetJet, you start with a fresh pad and cleaning solution every time. And when you're done, you just toss the pad. Swiffer WetJet, the faster, easier, cleaner way to clean your floors.
Dynamite! Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
If you've been listening, you know you can get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. But how do you use it? Paying attention to key pieces of information on the report, including your personal information, open credit accounts, and credit inquiries, can help you not only understand your credit standing and catch any errors, but regularly checking your credit report may also help you identify potential fraud or identity theft. Go to annualcreditreport.com to get started with your free credit report, and keep listening for more tips. This message has been brought to you by the United Way of Southwood and Adams County's Financial Stability Coalition.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. The timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi.
Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 64.
Welcome back. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere show. We are here every Monday night at 7 to talk about how do we keep moving Wisconsin forward? How do we build a better, stronger democracy? How do we go about forming a more perfect union? And I thought that given all the talk about the border and what's happening, I would have a guest, Kane Ulahan, and we have a little technical glitch here. So I just wanted to share a story. Kane Ulahan has been working for 15 years as an immigration lawyer. He has focused his work on trying to facilitate and make this a much better state. We talked a little bit about what was going on with the immigration and asylum issues, and how as people apply for asylum because they are facing persecution at home, that they are allowed to legally apply for asylum. And if they qualify, they're allowed to work. And you know, it's very important that folks realize that these issues and these folks that are trying to get across our border seeking democracy are aware that they are able to work. And I think for the rest of us is to realize that this is not illegal immigration. And so, Kane, we figured out this little technical glitch.
Sorry about that.
Here, let's just talk about, though, when you qualify for asylum, are you able to work? So, I mean, what is this process? Because there's so much, everybody thinks this is like illegal. People are coming here, right? We know that there are a certain percentage that are illegal. But this asylum issue in this Title 42, it addresses a legal right to come in.
That's right.
So yeah. If you qualify, what happens?
100%. So if you have a legitimate claim for asylum, you make your application,
And then after waiting a few months, you're able to apply for a work permit. So then you're granted this work permit, and then you can legally work in basically any job. So we've got, you know, many, many people here seeking asylum, legitimate claims, and now they're able to work legally too, which is filling a really big need we have in our economy. I mean, everyone knows. I see it all the time. I'm sure you do. Employers are looking for employees. They can't find enough workers. Here we've got people in a legitimate process, but in the meantime, they want to work, and they are hard workers. They are dedicated. They're reliable. And I see it all the time. I mean, think about it. These asylum seekers have to pay legal fees to work with someone like me, and they make it work. They work low, oftentimes low-wage jobs, and they're grateful to do it because it's an opportunity that they don't have otherwise, and they're safe. So they're, you know, they're not in the country where they've been threatened or harmed, and they're working, they're contributing to our Wisconsin economy, and they're keeping our farms running, frankly.
So tell me about that. When you say they keep our farms, our dairy farms, you know, that's our brand in the country, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The dairy state.
Green Bay Packers, cheese and milk. So help me understand to what impact, you know, are immigrants playing on our farms, and how does this asylum situation really, why is it really important for folks in Wisconsin, especially folks outside of the cities?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for many, many years now, our farms in Wisconsin and, you know, our dairy farms have depended on immigrant labor. You know, I'd say well over 80% of dairy farms are immigrant labor. Many of those are undocumented. And now there's been a shift, too. I mean, there are less migrants coming from Mexico than there used to be. And a lot of them are getting more established and moving on to other types of jobs. Those mostly Mexican workers, there still are Mexican workers on dairy farms, no doubt, but there are less than before. And that need, that sort of hole, is being filled by largely by asylum seekers, many of whom are from Central America. So that's what's going on right now in Wisconsin. And people oftentimes don't see that backstory to it all. We just see the headlines about the border. But all that has a trickle-down effect into our communities and our economy. And our identity is the dairy state, right?
Yeah. It is, you know, we think about the Statue of Liberty, right, as the beacon of recognizing, you know, my grandparents came from Denmark. Europe, it was, you know, disaster time, and people came looking for a new start. With all the talk about Title 42, and we have, you know, a couple minutes left, or maybe not even that much, what's up with the Dreamers, right? Yeah. There was this idea of the Dream Act, and what is that briefly, and where are the, you know, where are the Dreamers in this?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got so many young immigrants who, and they're not, some are not that young anymore, just immigrants who were brought here as children. So it wasn't their choice, it was their parents' choice, but they have, this country has become their own country. They don't know oftentimes the country they came from. I've had many clients who came here as babies, so they have no recollection of the country they came from. The U.S. is home for them, but they don't have a legal paper. They don't have status. And so over the years, we've tried to, you know, Congress has tried to pass a DREAM Act to give legal status to those young folks that we've now called Dreamers. And they've come very close to passing it, but it never has. So we have DACA, which is the program that started under the Obama administration, and that's still there. So basically, you know, some people are under DACA. They got a work permit, but they don't have anything permanent.
Thank you, Attorney Kane Houlihan of Houlihan Immigration Law.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back, folks. To Attorney.
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life. The bills, the job, the family. Things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Locally grown, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough, but if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swollen. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
Smiles are powerful. They spread joy, laughter, and hope. But not everyone gets a fair chance at a smile. Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. In America, most children with clefts receive immediate care, but others around the world may never have access to the surgery they need to thrive. Smile Train is changing that. As the world's largest cleft charity, our sustainable model has sponsored more than 1.5 million smiles. We offer training and financial support to local medical professionals so they can provide life-changing surgery and other essential services at no cost to families.
It's more than to see these children, to hear the difference that we make. And for me, being born with a cleft lip and palate, knowing what they went through is so life-changing for me.
Help us change the world one smile at a time. To learn more, visit smiletrain.org/learn.
Tired of low or no connectivity? Do you live in BTN, Bug Tussle Nowhere? We want to talk to you. Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet to the places others don't. No contracts, no data caps, truly unlimited internet. Call 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows around 48 tonight under clear skies, west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Slight chance for scattered rain showers. Tomorrow, highs level off around 77, cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Lows around 41. Tomorrow night, clear skies. Sunny skies and calm Wednesday with highs in the mid-60s, chance for scattered storms Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 75.
Folks, what it means is that there are, you know, it's a small committee and they're talking about what we're going to do with our budget and what we're going to do with what, $6 billion plus in surplus and all the policy and debate that's going on. And I thought it would be great to have you, Evan, to give us just sort of the latest update from the trenches. So the listeners are knowing what's, you know, what's going on with our taxpayer dollars and what policies are at issue and, you know, what's going to happen in this state and are we going to be moving forward or not? Right. So,
yeah, no, it's perfect timing. Thank you for having me on again. The budget's the most important thing the legislature does every session. We have budgets in Wisconsin that last 2 years. For context, the last 2 years operating budget of about $85 billion, healthcare, schools, roads everywhere. I mean, it touches every single aspect of people's lives, which is why I say it's the most important thing. We are right in the middle of the debate. Governor introduced the budget February 15, month of April. The Joint Finance Committee went around the state. We met in person. 1,400 people came to our committee to tell us their thoughts. About 3,000 more sent in letters, emails, phone calls, et cetera, to my office. So really strong engagement for folks. And now in the month of May and the month of June, the legislature's debating the budget. So here's how it goes. I mean, I'll give you the real, cut and dry version. The governor has introduced a budget that sets the benchmark. What does a successful budget look like? And what happens in the months after that is the legislative Republicans who disagree with some of the items the governor has prioritized, they spend their entire spring and summer catching up to that mark that the governor set. And it is a real pleasure to work with Governor Evers and his team and his budget office. They have put together a document this year that I think really meets the moment. We've got this, what we sometimes call unwinding of COVID, right? We're coming out of couple of years where the federal government really stepped up and have helped people with health care and food share benefits and child care benefits. And a lot of that is going away. And so part of this budget is really defined by how Wisconsinites are going to step up and help one another out now that that federal relief is going away. So we're in the midst of Tuesday, May 2nd, 2 weeks ago, the Republicans started the debate. Unfortunately, they took a very partisan approach to the first day of the budget debate by removing a number of the items of the governor's budget, 545 to be exact, the most ever. So I really look at it as the most partisan way to go about debating the governor's budget. But what we know is what I said. Look, governor puts out this benchmark. He sets the goalpost. What is success? And we are dragging the Republicans. They're inching, crawling, limping, however you want to say it, to meet the mark that the governor has set. So this week, Joint Finance is talking about how courts are funded and prosecutors and public defenders, a criminal system that really has struggled and needs a lot of help. The lawyers in those in the real trenches are really in need of a raise. They've earned it. And then on Thursday, we're debating clean water and a lot of agricultural support that we do for our ag community. And I mean, these are you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars in agriculture. So we're right in the thick of things. And the goal is to have the budget done by June 30th. So in the next couple of weeks, I think your listeners can, every day there's going to be a new development to plug in and to learn about.
So, you know, there's been a lot of talk on shared revenue and local control and local government and how the you know, the surplus gets divvied up. Yeah. I'm a little older than you, so I was a steel worker for 8 years, and you know, I just remember it was just, if you were blue collar then, and this was like, you know, late 70s, that's 1970s, right? We had health insurance and we had pensions, and people knew that if they worked hard, they could save money and they could buy their own cabin up north. And I listen to young people, and people can't even dream and imagine that kind of middle class. So what happened, and how does this, the budget and the removal of these 545 items, how does that impact people? Right. I mean, if you're just hard working, right, you're not a lawyer like me, what's at stake?
You know, it's really hard to summarize because the budget impacts everybody's life in different ways. One of the most important decisions that the Republicans did was to continue the partisan attack and refuse to expand Medicaid. And when we say expand Medicaid, we talk about expand the income eligibility mark. And what we're really targeting is the people that are working, but not working and not they're not offered a benefit at their workplace. And they're not making enough to be able to afford health insurance. And sometimes you're talking, it's a pretty big expense. We're talking about people that make $17,000, $18,000, $19,000 a year, having the government come in and step in and help them with subsidized health insurance through expansion of Medicaid. And there are a lot, your listeners probably know this has been a fight that we've been going on for a long time. We're one of 10 states in America that hasn't expanded Medicaid. We receive billions of dollars in federal aid, so it pays for itself. It's become ideological because the Republicans call it welfare. But we're talking about working people. Right. I mean, we're not talking about people with zero income. They're covered already. We're talking about people in that next income tier up above 100% of the federal poverty guidelines. So they got a job. They got income. They're trying. But you see this in so many different areas. That's really the biggest piece to talk about. But you see it in transportation, housing. You know, the Republicans added money in transportation, added money to affordable housing. There were provisions that would make college free for kids that are coming out of working class families, right? So these are all ways that we know work to help people climb up that economic ladder that you're talking about. And it's slipperier and slipperier in America, right? You mentioned pension. It's an evaporating thing in the private sector, a thing called a pension. There was a provision in the governor's budget that would have helped every privately employed person in Wisconsin have a retirement savings account. There's about 1 million working people in Wisconsin that have a job that doesn't offer them a 401k or a retirement account. And Republicans stripped that out of the budget.
So you've been kind. I call one of the Republicans King Boss. Okay, it's just remarkable to me that someone that, you know, is one of 99, but acts as if he is a king. And, you know, I know you're working and I don't mean to get into this, but where does the money go? We're talking about a surplus, yeah. Right? So if it's not going to working people, where do they want the money to go to?
Well, I expect them to have an income tax cut of some form, probably a income tax that would give a cut to the higher income earners. It's the exact opposite of what we've just been talking about. The governor had proposed a 10% tax cut for people making 100 grand or less or 150 grand or less for a married household. That would have given tax relief to over 2.5 million Wisconsin families. I mean, just that's targeting the middle class. I think the Republicans will have a tax cut that favors the wealthy. So that'll be a big chunk of it. You know, there's some agreement that there are one-time expenditures. You know, the state pays for like the University of Wisconsin system and the prison system. Anytime we need to build something like a new dorm or a science building on campus, we usually borrow money for that. I think there's agreement between both parties that using some of that one-time money is a good idea to build stuff. It's like buying a house without a mortgage. And if you can avoid those future expenses, you free up money in future budgets. And so the governor actually recommended using almost $2 billion of the $7 billion surplus for that purpose. And what we know is over 20 years, that would have saved $800 million. So there might maybe the Republicans agree with that. I don't think they're going to meet the mark that the governor has put out there. Look, Mark, I think they're going to sink money into places that they that they've prioritized. Then I do hear the water cooler to kind of pull the curtain back. They right. know they know they've got to do something to get the governor's attention, right? I mean, Tony Evers was reelected in November of 22 by three times the margin that he was elected in 2018. April was a really good election for Janet Protasiewicz, 11-point victory. They know they got it. They know they're not on a winning track record here. Now, they've also sold their soul to interests that, you know, may not let them go far enough. So that's the tension. If you want a real view of what's happening in the trenches, it's the tension between the governor and the mark that he has set and the Republicans who don't want to spend money, but know they've got to spend money. Boy, public school funding is going to be the most important marker here. The governor's got the biggest, most robust investment in our public school system ever, the biggest increase ever proposed. Republicans, we'll see what they do. That's going to be a real test to see what happens with this budget debate, like to forecast whether or not we have a successful budget that the governor is going to really feel compelled to sign. I think you could look at public education coming up in the weeks ahead as a marker.
You know, I think that it's, to me, when I hear you say that, it's like, how can we not spend it on the kids? You know, I'm looking at grandkids now that are in the public schools in Milwaukee. But we're also looking at, you know, AI, and I'm looking at, you know, the world is going to change so quickly. And if we don't have our kids educated and on the cutting edge, they're not going to be able to compete.
I totally agree with you.
I don't understand the rationale for gutting our kids' future.
No, and you saw in the fall election public education more politicized than on the right. You know, you've seen school board candidates and banning books and going after all the kind of buzzwords and red meat on the right. But you had Tim Michaels openly talking about cutting public education again. And, you know, he was trounced by Evers. Mark, look, you, I couldn't agree with you more. These are seeds that take a while to bear fruit as well. When you cut public education funding or when you invest in it, it takes years for the impact of that, right?
A kid starts at five and then, you know, it's 13 years later.
That's right. Well, and years ago, almost a decade ago now, the Republicans really, 10 years ago, they slashed public education funding, and you see it in the hallways today. It all goes back to those decisions. And so this is a moment to make up for cuts done 10 years ago. And as you say, and rightly point out, it's a time of a historic surplus. So if we cannot agree on really historic investments for kids now, I mean, so that's really a big marker. I mean, that a real test to see whether this can be a successful budget or not. It's going to be public education.
I sense just, you know, Governor Evers, he came out of education. He's always been a believer in children and the future. How do you see that playing out? I mean, you know, the country, look at, if you're outside the cities, public education is all you've got, right?
Yeah, and often the largest employer in the city or the county. So look, it's Evers' biggest priority in this budget.
It's all right.
Biggest priority in the budget.
Attorney Mark Thompson, I am here with Rep.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
One Thursday for Civic Media. I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 64.
It's got to be done before then. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. I am here with Representative Evan Goyke. He was elected in 2012 to the Assembly, so he's a seasoned veteran now at the politics in the state. He worked, he's a husband, he's a father, he was a public defender, he was adjunct professor of law at Marquette University Law School. He is a Marquette Law alum. I'm a Marquette alum, so I've got a lot of respect for Evan. And we spent some time talking about joint finance and the latest, but the rumor is you're also thinking about maybe running for another office. Is that a true rumor?
It is a true rumor. I am a filed and declared candidate for city attorney in the city of Milwaukee with an election date in April of 2024, so about a year from now.
So tell us, why are you running for city attorney? And also, I'm going to put it this way, because you're bringing all this joint finance knowledge from Madison. How does that impact how you think about the city, how you understand the relationship between the city and the state, and why the city attorney, and how does that work for Evan Goyke?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So I'm going to kind of mix in, I think, hopefully answers to all this. It's been partly my experience as a state representative that I've gotten to work with the city attorney's office, really exposed to the work that the assistant city attorneys do. And specifically, a number of years ago, we worked on legislation regarding foreclosed homes. And we worked on a bill that I authored that ended up passing and getting signed into law that made it more difficult for landlords that weren't paying their taxes or fixing up their properties from buying more properties. We had this basically unregulated cycle where problem landlords would lose a house, buy a house, and the poor people in the neighborhood were left in the wash cycle, right? And so I got to work with assistant city attorneys frontline. This is what they were doing. They were trying to keep the neighborhood in my neighborhood, on my block. And I got to know them and got to know what they did. And I thought, that is a damn cool job. What they got to do and the aid at the city attorney's office is responsible for a lot, but specifically that experience that could really impact a lot, the quality of life, public safety, value of the neighborhoods, et cetera, et cetera. So I pay attention to the office. It's not something that I've, most people in politics would not say. They couldn't list what the city attorney does necessarily. But what we've seen in Milwaukee in the last couple of years is what happens when, in my opinion, when the office is under somebody that's not capable of managing the law firm. Good, seasoned attorneys have left. There's been vacancies. It's been pretty chaotic. And what the result has been is missed deadlines in court. inability to, you know, process things as simple as a development contract or giving a legal advice to the city council so that they can enact policy as they are elected to do in a timely manner. That has affected everything from high-rise developments on the lakefront to reckless driving ordinances that impact, you know, neighborhoods across the city. So I've took a really long, hard look at the power and the role and the importance of that office. And I think my skill set is a good match. My time in the legislature has really exposed me to this huge, wide array of issues that face the city and how the city attorney and the city attorney's office are intertwined in those really critical issues.
So, you know, you talked about housing. How does the city attorney impact that issue? And, you know, how does that, you know, what percentage of the population in the city are we talking about? And also then how does that ripple countywide and statewide?
Yeah, and it's the city attorney's not just it's not just like a law firm for anybody that walks in. It represents the city as an entity, and specifically in housing, the Department of Neighborhood Services is the city agency tasked with enforcing building codes, and on the outside and on the inside at times. And the city attorney is essentially the prosecutor. So it's not a perfect analogy, but think of the Department of Neighborhood Services as the housing cops, and the city attorney as the prosecutor for those housing cops. And what we've saw in the last administration is the use of an existing law, so it's nothing that I'd create, called receivership. And basically, they make the argument to the court that these landlords are making huge amounts of money and not paying the fines issued against them and not following the court's order to fix up their property. And receivership just basically says, we're going to take the rent and we're going to fix what's wrong with the house that you own before you can cash that rent check. And let me tell you, Mark, it caught the attention of landlords throughout the city of Milwaukee because it hit them on the bottom line. And we're just talking about bad landlords. I'm not talking about every single landlord. I'm talking about people that don't keep up their properties and don't give people a decent place to live. How that impacts the community is massive. We're talking about little kids growing up in quality housing to make sure that they're lead free, lead paint, lead water, that the condition of the house, it impacts public safety. Often these properties become nuisance for criminal activity, drags down your house value and my house value, and that impacts the city in the property tax base. More broadly, the healthier the neighborhoods of the city of Milwaukee, the healthier Milwaukee County and the state of Wisconsin is. So this is going to be a huge priority of mine when elected. The city attorney cannot impact every single aspect of life in Milwaukee, but this housing issue is directly square in their wheelhouse and their authority. We have existing law that can benefit the people. We just need a city attorney willing to use it.
So along this theme, you're looking at running a city attorney, but you're right now on Joint Finance as the ranking assembly Democrat. You got like 30 seconds. What's the lessons about this budget, this money, and the city?
We have a challenge. We got to meet the moment. We have divided government, so there is a possibility to find consensus. Got to be willing to give a little and get a little. We haven't had many fair deals for Milwaukee in my 11 years in office, and I am hopeful that this is an unprecedented moment where we can deliver the type of aid or resources necessary that every neighborhood in Milwaukee can thrive. So I am optimistic moving forward, but damn, we got a lot of work to do to make sure it happens right.
Well, Representative and Attorney Evan Goyke, thank you so much for joining us. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We'll be back next Monday night at 7, WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. but MDA helped her get the best treatments and care. And they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at
MDA.org. WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home of the